I'm Justin.
I'm Teresa.
And this is True Country.
With us on the show today, we have Michelle Wright. Michelle is the first Canadian-born artist in the modern era of country music to have a top 10 hit in America, Take It Like a Man, in 1992, a number one video on CMT USA, and to win a major U.S. music industry award, the Academy of Country Music Top New Female Artist in 1993. Her storied career is filled with milestones that include sold-out concert tours, 25 top 10 radio hits, more than 40 major awards, including her 2011 induction into the Canadian Country Music Hall of Fame, and millions of records sold. She wrapped up 2019, taking her A Right Christmas Tour 2019 across Ontario and Alberta, and 2020 is already shaping up to be a hectic year on the road. Along with her producer and fellow Canadian, Bob Funk, Michelle continues to work on new music for release on the Nashville indie label Navigator Records. Michelle Wright, welcome to True Country.
Well, hello, everybody. I just have to say right off the top, when you were talking about Take It Like a Man and the success of that, we were actually playing a club somewhere in Texas, and I'm afraid I can't remember because, first off, it was a few years ago, and definitely we were on the road constantly, you know. Uh-huh. But I will never forget, we were playing some club in Texas, and we played Take It Like a Man, and they were singing back to us, and we got this great big, you know, applause at the end, and my band and I were just like, oh, that was cool. And we got on the bus jumping around. We were all so excited. Oh. We went, we think we've got a hit. We think that's what it feels like when you're getting a hit record. And so I always remember that.
Oh, that's
awesome.
That's very cool.
Michelle, we always like to start this off with a random icebreaker question that has nothing to do with anything really. So we're from Texas, which is a big sports state. You're from Canada, which is a pretty big hockey country. When you were growing up, what was your favorite sport?
Oh boy. Well, you know what? I was quite an athlete. I did volleyball, basketball, and track and field. Oh, wow. So I would say volleyball was my favorite sport. Okay. If you're speaking about myself personally.
Yes.
But of course, when it came to just growing up as a Canadian, this just hockey was on, you know, it was on the TV. and even now, when my husband likes to watch, you know, a lot of sports, and then when it comes time for the playoffs, for the Stanley Cup playoffs, mm-hmm. we'll tune in. And as soon as I start, I don't mind that he doesn't watch all the sports. He likes his basketball, he likes his and he likes his football, and he likes his baseball, you know, so that's enough, right? But I must say, when we do tune into the playoffs for the Stanley Cup, and just the sound of hockey mm-hmm. being played, you know, the ice skates and the puck hitting the boards and everything, it just makes me feel warm and fuzzy.
Well, there's nothing like playoff hockey either. That's hockey myself, so that's, yes, yeah. I'm with you on that.
And, you know, if you ever see a live hockey game, you just can't. It is so, these are big boys, and it's very, very, you better be tough.
Oh, right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Surprisingly, we have a lot of hockey down here in Texas. I play a little bit. We actually went to the Winter Classic, which they had outside. It was the Nashville Predators and the Dallas Stars, so they had 80, almost 90,000 people outside at the Cotton Bowl on New Year's Day, so it was interesting. That was really cool.
Well, awesome. Well, let's jump into music a little bit. Tell us how you got started, and then if you had a specific goal or intent when you did get started in the music industry.
Well, you know, my mom and dad were country music singers and performers on a local level. And keep okay. in mind, though, I came from a town of 500 people.
Oh, my.
So we were farmers, you know, grain farmers. So I grew up on the farm. Okay. And then my parents would play music locally. And, of course, they would head into the big city every now and then to play like a wedding or a dance or whatever. But every weekend they were playing somewhere, you know, the Moose Lodge or the Legion Hall or a wedding or a dance or maybe a club for the weekend or something. So I grew up around music, and it was, I remember just going to my mom's band practices and what have you. And my mother and father separated when I was young, so I sort of like had the privilege, I guess, on one hand, of going to see both of them play and to see both of them practice and all the rest. And I remember seeing my dad dress up in his rhinestone suits, and he looked like Johnny Cash. Oh. You know, he's very handsome, and I swear he looked. I just, you know, seeing him go off with a case of beer under one hand and his guitar in the other hand, and going off to do a gig somewhere with the boys, you know. And so I grew up around music, and I would go to the band practices, and they'd hand me the mic, and I'd sing a little bit and what have you. And on the farm, living with my mom and my stepdad, the garage was where rehearsal took place. So my dad insulated this garage for my mom so she could have band practice there. Now, they did switch around a bit at different people's homes, but you know, when it was our home, it was in the garage. And and so when the band wasn't there rehearsing, you know, my brother and I would go in there. My brother had started taking guitar lessons.
Okay.
And my mother played bass guitar. Hmm. And next thing, and there's a set of drums sitting there. Mm-hmm. And Karen Carpenter was a huge influence. Some people would even say that I sounded a little bit like her, which was quite a compliment, of course. So I started playing the drums. Okay. And that's really kind of sort of how I started. And so my mom and my brother and I did a few, like in grade 7, we did a little school thing, and I sang Satin Sheets, and I sang Bobby McGee, and I did House of the Rising Sun, and I played the drums, and mom played bass, and brother played guitar. And then it just sort of evolved from that into me getting my own little band going, and then, you know, where we were just playing school things. And then eventually, when I was 17 years old, I was hired with my first professional band, where I started making money, you know. I got paid for playing. I hope I'm not rambling too much, because then it kind of like starts to evolve and goes on and on from there. And just that I initially, you know, thought I would just do as my parents did, and which was lovely. You know, they seemed to have a lot of fun playing music, and you know, marry a farmer. I was dating a fellow, you know, already at 13. When you're in small town, you know, you start dating young people. You know, I don't know. You get hanging out a bit, and I had already had my eye on one fellow. We were together for a while, and we were going to get married, and we were going to farm, and I was going to play music, and that's how it was going to go. And so that's how it initially started.
Okay,
well, it sounds like you were in the Partridge Family for a little bit there before you.
Well, yes, sort of, kind of, yes. Definitely, that's funny that you say that, because it was music was really a big part of our family.
That's great.
And that's an awesome way to grow up too. Now, as far as let's say you get out of high school, strategy wise, what was the strategy going forward? You had mentioned maybe we were just going to get married, live on the farm, and do that. When did it start evolving and changing, where you said, I might want to do this and go to a bigger city and see if I can make this a career?
Well, so I started winning some talent contests, you know, and I thought, well, that's kind of cool. That's nice. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. And then while I was going to college, I would come home every weekend to play with my weekend band. And one weekend, every week I was gone all, you know, college, then weekend coming home to play. And my boyfriend Reed said to me, hey, there's a party this weekend. Do you have to go and play? Well, of course, you can't really not show up if you're a part of the band. And I was like, well, I can't really call in sick. I can't really not be there. You know, these guys at that time depend on me. And so I went and I did the gig, and while I was doing this, like, it's just a hole in the wall club, you know, this man kept walking up to the stage. I walked up a couple times and said, I can't hear the female singer, can you turn her voice up? And at this time I'm 18, I do believe.
Okay.
And so whatever, like, I don't know if they turned up my voice or not. But then as I was coming off the stage, he asked me if I would join him and his wife. So I sat down at the table with him, and he introduced himself to me, and he happened to be in Ontario. He lived in Michigan, and Ontario is just across the border in Canada. And it was kind of a camping cottage area where we were at, and I guess they had come to spend a weekend with some Canadian friends at their cottage. And he said, his name was Paul Wade, he was with a booking agency in Michigan, and he said, you have a very unique voice, you know, and I have some bands out of Nashville and all around that I book, who could really use a female singer like you. And I thought, oh, well, that's really cool. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, when I, you know, finished off the night and went home to talk to my mom and, you know, and I called him back the next day and said, well, I need to finish out my first year of college, but I'd love to come and audition with one of your bands. And so I auditioned in like the 1st of June or somewhere in there, might have even been a month before that, for this particular band. So that when my college year was up, I could then go out on the road for the summer. Mm-hmm. And I got the gig and I mm-hmm. went out on the road for that summer and I never looked back. You know, I called my mom, Max. We were playing spent many years playing the hot spots, as they say, or I guess I'm saying that kindly because they were, you know, and I was playing a bar in Muscatine, Iowa. It was my first week on the road full time as and I called my mom and I said, Mom, this is wow, you know. And of course it was great because you could play music and quite frankly we partied and mm-hmm. you just sort of was irresponsible, yet you had to be responsible, yet you were kind of free to just, you know, it's this really interesting kind of position I found myself in, really having a blast and playing music. And so I called my mom and she was very supportive because you know, you were talking about being from the Partridge family. Quite frankly, my childhood was pretty rough, and my mother was pregnant at 15 and married at 16, and had my brother, and then had me when she was 17, and then lost a child when she was 18, and we had a rough childhood herself, and then kind of, you know, we had it pretty rough there for many years, and so my mother was so, you know, kind of one of the first women of that sort of liberated time when women were, you know, growing out of some of those traditions, which I don't disagree with necessarily. I think some of the traditions are beautiful, but if it's mm-hmm. not what you want, you should have the freedom to maybe not live that tradition. But mm-hmm. my mom was kind of the first generation of, and she was just like, championing me to do what I wanted to do, to follow my dreams. And cool. And she was like, you know what, you can always go back to college, hon. So she mm-hmm. really supported me, as did my stepfather. And so I went out there on the road and started doing that. And I called her and she said, you go, girl. Mm-hmm. And I sat down in my room after that conversation with her and I wrote a song called Reaching for the Stars. And I might have been 19 at that time. Okay. And actually I was, because I turned 19 July 1st, my first week on the road.
Wow.
And I sat down and wrote a song called Reaching for the Stars. And it made my first record. And so again, it's sort of like, I kept showing up and things kept happening, and it's pretty amazing sometimes when I sit back and think about it, you know.
Yeah.
Tell me about the songs, the music that you were playing when you were on the road. Was it all cover songs or were you doing original stuff at that time?
Do you know, it was pretty much cover tunes with a few originals. That's such a good question too, because on one hand, I realized that if we keep doing this, we're just going to sound like the band that was here last week and mm-hmm. the band that's going to show up next week. And I knew, I will tell you, as a Canadian, when you're in a country at that time, maybe the population was around 25 million or so. When you're in a country with that population, you learn early that there's only room for one, you know, female singer that sounds like that, and mm-hmm. one male singer that sounds like that. And, you know, you had to figure out what it was about you that was going to separate you from the others. Mm-hmm. And I just sort of intuitively knew that. Mm-hmm. And so I would do a lot of males, like Merle Haggard. I would do Merle Haggard and I would do Glen Campbell. And mm-hmm. I would do, not necessarily the, and of course I did a lot of the girls sing songs too, because I mm-hmm. just loved, you know, the girls that I, Reba and Tanya. And now of course I did some of the traditional, you know, Loretta Lynn and Tammy Wynette and so on. Mm-hmm. But I also knew that I had to throw in some original things. So I would, you know, I would do a couple of my own songs in the show, mm-hmm. but I knew that I was already pushing the envelope a lot. Mm-hmm. And so I knew because I got fired one time too. And then I got a record deal 6 months later, which is interesting.
Oh, wow.
Right. mind you, this was 9 years into my career that But I was always pushing the envelope because I always knew that I had to find a way to be different than the band that was going to be there, the girl singer that was going to show up next week.
Sure.
And so I did a real variety, and I also did some pop and Motown stuff as well, because that was a part of my musical coloring as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I came up in that generation of, you know, my mom was a country singer, as my dad, as I was stating, but they kind of grew up with the Grand Ole Opry and mm-hmm. Hee Haw, you know, and I, which is great. But I grew up with Motown and, you know, rock and roll and mm-hmm. radio stations where you could push the button and move around, and a record player that I could play all the records I wanted. Mm-hmm. And so my exposure to music was much broader. And that's what I think we're experiencing again with this generation, is that if you're creative and if you're paying attention, you're going to soak up a lot of different stuff, and mm-hmm. then you're going to want to express it. And so in our shows, we really mixed it up.
Okay, awesome. Well, now we always ask all of our guests about highest and low moments in your journey, especially because we know some of those low points in your journey actually get you to the next place and open up doors of opportunity. So let's start out by kind of talking about what the lowest point in your journey has been so far, and then what did you do to overcome that?
Well, the lowest point so far, I mean, that's a challenging question to answer, because, you know, for example, once you get the record deal and once you start releasing music and it doesn't get played, mm-hmm. it's devastating when that happens. And, mm-hmm. and you realize that, oh my gosh, if this continues or, you know, how. And the issue with it is that you have no control over it. Mm. There's really nothing you can do to change that, mm-hmm. you know. But you have to learn to accept it and to follow your instincts about what it is that you want to do musically, even though it might not be being embraced immediately, or it might not ever be embraced to some degree. I mean, it depends on what kind of a career you want. If you want to have a big international career, which I dreamed of that, I dreamed of traveling the world. I thought, my gosh, what would it be like to be like Tammy Wynette and Merle Haggard and be able to be the, you know, wear those sparkly suits and just dress up. I just, you know, that fun of doing that kind of thing, and that whole world that you come from a town of 500 people and you start dreaming of what that would be like. And but there are certain steps sometimes that have to be taken to achieve that, mm-hmm. and so you don't want to sell your soul at the same time as you're trying to mm-hmm. achieve these kinds of goals. And then all of a sudden you've got all the responsibility of the team of people that are around you, and it gets so layered, you know. Mm-hmm. And so some of the challenges of playing club, I played the clubs for 9 years, 6 nights a week before I got my record deal. Jeez. And in those times there were broken down. We didn't, you know, I'm starting to sound so old, but I am 58 years old, so I'm not a kid, you know. I was gonna say that, you know, that the vehicle would break down on the side of the road and you have no money and you don't have a cell phone, and I would mm-hmm. literally hitchhike. I mean, I would get tell the boys, you stay there, and I would hitchhike into the next gap, and thank God nothing ever happened, you know. Yeah. And so there's the beginning of the career where you really start wondering, you know, am I and the rooms that we would stay in. I would always go up to the rooms first above the bar and clean them. Oh, and if the sheets, I would not let my band go into these horrible rooms, you know, and I would clean, and I'm still a bit of a clean freak. But, so there's those things, you know, yeah. I mean, you deal with a lot of disappointments in life, you know, mm-hmm. in careers, and it doesn't matter. And you just have to persist mm-hmm. now. And I continue to persist, you know, mm-hmm. So you just have to persist until perhaps all the doors are closed mm-hmm. and there is no other choice. But mm-hmm. for me, even in those times of disappointment and challenge, mm-hmm. there was always someone or something yeah. right there going, come on, you know, we yeah. can, we are here for you. I support whatever. And even yeah. to this day, my husband, I mean, I've got a wonderful team of people around me now. And my husband is one of my biggest supporters. Mm-hmm. He's like, I know that single didn't work, but you know what? Come on, honey, you know, and sometimes yeah. there's no money. My bank account is empty and his isn't. He's like, don't you worry, honey, we're yeah. going to keep going. You know, I mean, I wouldn't have survived without him. So yeah. it's that straightforward. Yep.
Well, tell me about the happier parts. Tell me about some of the highest points in your career so far.
Well, so, and you take all of that I just stated, mm-hmm. and then you put the pile of just unbelievable moments of that I, you know, I mean, winning Top New Artist of the Year in America and being the first to Canadian female artist to do that. Now, mind you, I just read something. So it was at the Academy of Country Music that I was awarded Top New Female Artist of the Year, mm-hmm. and I was the first Canadian to do that. And yet, I noticed how the wording of that was set up in all of my bios in the modern era of country music, right? Mm. Because then I went back and just looked recently, and Anne Murray actually won. So I was the top new artist of the year, and in 1970, Anne Murray won the award. I think it might have been called Artist to Watch For or something like that, right?
Okay.
So really the truth is she was the first Canadian to win an award at the ACM as the Artist to Watch For. And then I followed that some 22 years yeah. later, I won a Top New Female Artist of the Year in America.
Cool.
And let me tell you, America, thank you so much for welcoming me because it changed my life, you know.
Wow.
And what it did for me for my career in Canada is that, you know, the bottom line, and it still remains the same, you know, sort of the entertainment world, we don't have paparazzi and we don't even have a late night talk show there. We don't have ways to expose our Canadian artists the way they do in America. Mm-hmm. And so by that exposure here in America, my country of Canada, they came on board in such a big way because they really hadn't heard much about me.
Mm.
But what America does and how they help to expose an artist to help their career mm-hmm. is substantial. And so it changed my whole career in Canada as well. And then I, you know, followed that up with you know, singing at the World Series and doing
wow.
Jay Leno and traveling yeah. the world and, you know, 5-time Female Vocalist of the Year in Canada and then being entered into the Hall of Fame in 2011. So
that's
many,
awesome.
Many, many wonderful things like that.
Persistence.
And persistence.
There you go.
But, but you also need... You need that team around you to, you know, you can be as persistent as you want, but if people aren't coming on board,
mm-hmm.
you know, like people will ask me, how do you get going? How do you get started? What, you know, and I will say, you know, you start. And then if you find that, well, next thing you know, agents are starting to want to talk to you. And then next thing you know, managers are starting to want to talk to you. Next thing you know, record companies are wanting. And, you know, if that is happening, then you're on the right path. You know,
mm-hmm.
if you're 15 or 20 years into this and that's never happened, then perhaps you're not on the right trail.
Sure.
And I'll tell you, I had a friend recently and I admire her a lot for this. She was a gal that was pursuing music and 20 years into it, she sat down and she said, you know, she just said, no one's calling me. And I just thought that was very brave of her
mm-hmm.
to kind of, sometimes you've got to get real, you know, because
yeah.
not everybody, not that she didn't have the talent,
mm-hmm.
but for some reason, it
yeah.
just wasn't her path.
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah.
Well, you've obviously been at it for a while now. With all the knowledge that you have, is there anything you'd do differently if you were just starting out in the industry?
Yes, I would write more.
Okay.
I would write more of my own songs and try to be a bit more persistent. You know, the great thing about what's going, it's kind of ironic too, though. You know, I was going to say, on one hand, songwriters are really being hit very hard right now by the change of how music is sold and how it is heard. And it's really really brutal, quite frankly. I was I was going to say, on the other hand, you know, if I would insist that I write more and that mm-hmm. more of my songs get recorded on my records, you know, keeping in mind though that I always would search this wonderful town of Nashville and the great Canadian writers as well, mm-hmm. and try to find the best songs that I could find. Sure. Was important to me, but I also was writing some pretty cool stuff. Mind you, it was not exactly, you know, there was always a little bit of a challenge that I faced because I wasn't necessarily fitting into the box. You know, I always sort of pushed the envelope a little bit, mm-hmm. but I would have insisted a bit more on my songs being recorded. And in a couple of situations, probably about five situations, I would have followed my instincts more. And
gotcha.
If something is if there's something really, but you know what? It's scary. It takes courage because how do I know that I know? I think I know this. And
right.
I feel like, because they were some pretty big decisions.
Okay.
And I didn't want to do a couple of things, but I went ahead and did them anyhow. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, they didn't work out. Hmm. And I kind of intuitively knew it.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if you can, I don't know if that can, you know, I don't know if when you're starting out, you're going to know enough to follow your instincts because mm-hmm. you're not mature enough yet. Or although then there's someone like a Miranda Lambert, you know, or there's another little young gal coming up in Canada. Her name is Tennille Towns.
Mm-hmm.
And she had some really big songs in America. And she's up for a new artist at the Academy of Country Music Awards this year.
Okay.
This young gal is 25 years old now, and somehow she's very tuned in and really has followed her instinct, and it's been amazing to watch.
Cool. Well, yeah. Tell everybody what you're doing today. What tour, writing, tell everybody what's going on today.
Well, yeah, honestly, it's interesting because sometimes I get asked, what are your new goals, or what are your goals this year? And my goals this year are the same as they always have been. And I'm doing the same thing I've sort of always done.
Mm-hmm.
On one hand, nothing has changed. You know, mm-hmm. I get up every day hoping that the agent's got another gig for me and hoping that I've got some kind of songwriting appointment set up or that some kind of idea will come to me and I'll sit down and create something today. Touring, writing songs, being with my band, those are still the things that fill my life with,
mm-hmm.
you know, with great joy and great satisfaction. Yet on the other hand, it's really challenging. You know, it's challenging to write a song,
mm-hmm.
and to make it worth anything that you even want to listen to again, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
It's challenging to keep a band going and all of those sorts of things, but those are still the things I do, still the things I want to do with as much passion now as I've ever had.
Yeah.
And so I keep putting one foot in front of the other, mm-hmm. and, fans keep showing up and the phone keeps ringing. So,
awesome.
You know, thank God. Right.
Yep.
Now it's not always like that though. You know, there's years it ebbs and flows. And so
yep.
again, it's, you show up and something's either going to happen or it's not.
Yep.
Are you playing more up in Canada or the US or both right now?
You know, it seems like more in Canada right now, but I have signed a new deal here in America. And they're starting. They're getting a bit more work for me here in America. So it's really challenging without an American agent, and mm-hmm. so hopefully that will help me to be able to work more in America.
Cool.
Awesome. Right. Well, I'm going to ask you the most important question that we ask people on this show, and that is, what is true country to you?
Well, true country to me is definitely, though we do have some artists today, I think, that are carrying forward the traditions. You know, Merle Haggard and Tammy and Loretta and George, and, you know, that to me is true country.
All right.
Boom. That's an easy answer, and I agree with it 100%. So there you go.
Yeah. I mean, now I feel like people like Miranda Lambert and Luke Combs and Blake Shelton, there are still artists that are carrying that torch, and that's great, you know, But truth is, we can't, it's not going to stand still. You know, it's going to continue to evolve. And that's just how it is. And then thank God that there's still room for some of that tradition, because I enjoy it all. But boy, my husband and I will sit on the front porch and just have us a Merle Haggard night, and we would just,
yeah,
you know, yeah,
cool.
Well, I'm going to ask you one final thing that we need from you, and we're going to put you on the 30-second world famous True Country shot clock. So you're going to have 30 seconds to answer 6 questions as fast as you can. So, are you ready, ma'am?
I think so. You after the long answers I've given you guys, you're like, oh, in county.
It's good. You filled up space. That's good. We needed that.
It was a great story. No.
But yes, 30 seconds. This is rapid fire. As fast as you can.
You bet.
All right. So let's begin. What is the nickname for your favorite instrument?
Her name is Bertha. And she was on the road with me all those years, those 9 years before I got my record deal. And she's in the Hall of Country Hall of Fame in Canada.
Awesome. Yeah. What is the instrument you wish you could play?
Piano.
What is the best concert you ever attended?
That's too hard to answer, you guys. Wait. The best I'm going to say... Merle Haggard, of course. I saw Charlie Pride. I shared the stage with him. I couldn't believe it. I have to say Steely Dan, James Taylor, Rod Stewart.
You're cheating.
I'm cheating.
Whose tour bus would you like to hang out on?
Miranda Lambert.
If you could only listen to 3 artists for the rest of your life, who would they be?
Lord Almighty.
You're going to start naming 50 people, man. I know it.
Merle Haggard, Aretha Franklin, The Beatles.
Ooh. Ooh.
And lastly, what is Toby Keith drinking in his red solo cup?
Chocolate milk, I think.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I think that's
we've
the
never
first
had a
answer.
First chocolate milk. Yeah,
yeah, I don't think we've had chocolate milk before.
Has anybody ever said chocolate milk? Am I the first?
I think you are the first.
I thought you would have gone with Pabst Blue Ribbon or something like that. But
of course, that's the obvious.
Right? Yeah, uh-huh. Exactly. Yeah.
I think he's pulling the rug over all of our eyes, and he's drinking chocolate milk.
All right.
Interesting. I'm going to look for that milk mustache next time I see him singing.
Awesome. Well, this has been fun. If people want to look you up, where can they find you? Give us your social media, website, all that good stuff.
Well, of course, the standards, you know, thank God you can just put someone's name in and they'll all
show up. The Google search bar. That's
right. Do the Googling. But I'm on Facebook under Michelle Wright, of course, and Twitter under The Wright Music, I do believe. And my website is michelle-wright.com. We're all over there, and I'm a big fan of all of that, because I love to follow artists too, and I love to see what they're up to. So you can follow me as well.
Awesome. That sounds great. Well, if y'all enjoyed today's interview with Michelle, please like and rate and review the podcast. We would sure appreciate it. And of course, you can find all of this episode and all of our episodes at truecountrypodcast.com.
And on behalf of myself and Teresa, thank you again, Michelle, for joining us. We really appreciate it, ma'am.
Well, thank you, my dear. It's my pleasure. And carry on, you guys.
Thank you so much.
And I am Justin Mason.
I'm Teresa.
And this is True Country.